All right, we're now beginning the much long awaited part two of our Chazara of Baba Basra. And our goal is, no matter what, we're going to finish within an hour. And if we're not done by the end of the hour, that's it. It'll just have to be a part three. But I think that Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to cover ground. So we'll start with Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph. Question is posed according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. He says that a person who is dividing his estate can give a greater portion to somebody who would otherwise be eligible to inherit him. And even though it's not exactly the portions that were set forth by the Torah. So the Gemara asks the question, Bibari Heich, is this true only with respect to a man who is a Shchimimar? Is this also true with respect to a Bari when he is healthy? So the Gemara brings a raya from the way in which the Tanai of Bun and Dikwin works. A person has children from a first marriage, and then the wife predeceases him, but there is nonetheless a commitment that they will get the portion of the ksula that the mother would have otherwise received at the time in which the man subsequently dies, even if he remarries. And the Bun and Dikwin do not have a claim with respect to Nechosim, which are Meshubadim, and that's because the Nusach is that they inherit as they get the money, not as a previous matana, which would outweigh subsequent lukuchos, but they receive it as yorshim, in which case they come afterwards. It appears that this matana works, even though it was done by a bari, despite the fact the loshin is one of yerusha. So that seems to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka said his din even with respect to a bari. The Gemara then later on says la milsi in the name of Abai, because you don't have the similar loshin with respect to the benos nukvan, who get to be supported similarly from the estate of the husband of their mother, whose mother predeceased him, and the assets are set aside for them to be supported until they get married, and that's a lashon matana. So Rashbam says the la milsi has nothing to do with whether Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka was talking about a bari. He certainly wasn't talking about a bari. However, the Tosfos learns differently. He says no, it is a refutation because it's saying it's both a lashon yerusha and matana, in which case the lashon yerusha is not governing, and that indicates that only in this particular case is the bari is considered to be good when it was made by a bari, but otherwise the fact that it's going to people otherwise would have yarshin, have been in line for succession of yarshining, as in the case of the banim dichrin, would not be dispositive in terms of the matana being valid if it's not done by a shkimira. And we see from here that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's halacha only applies to a shkimira and not to a bari. It brings us to Simon Kuf Lamed Beis, to Daf Kuf Lamed Beis. Daf Kuf Lamed Beis tells us, as a general rule, that sometimes when we decide a case, we go after umdana. What did we know that the person definitely has in mind? And that this is ascribed to Rav Nachman, and who sometimes actually does go after umdana, after assessing what was the person's true intention. The example that's given is a person who thinks that his son died, and therefore he gives away all of his nechasim, his possessions, to somebody else, and then discovers that his son is really alive. So we say that the matana is not considered to be a valid matana, because had he known that his son was still alive, he wouldn't have given his assets to others. And Rabbi Nachman says the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh. And yet we see that with respect to a person who gives all of his nechasim to his wife, if it's not a nesua, it's an arusa or a grusha, he gives all of the nechasim to her, that this supplants her right to be able to collect the ksuva, even though presumably she never would have accepted all of the possessions, all of the assets, had she known she would forego the ksuva. So why don't we go after umdana there? So the Gemara says, no, here the umdana is that she's willing to take a chance that the creditors will collect all of these assets from her, and she'll lose the ability to collect the ksuba, and she'll be karachas mikan o mikan. She'll be empty in both directions because she's so flattered that he's giving away all of his assets to her. So therefore, it's not a contradiction to the concept of umdana. And it brings us to Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel. Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, we're told that if a man gives away all of his assets and he gives us a little piece to his wife and everything else to the children, so let's assume that she's accepting that little piece as full payment of her ksuba, unless he leaves aside even one tree, even one little bit. If he leaves aside even one little bit, so it's assuming that she knows that she can go after that little bit, just like she can go after that one little tree to collect taksuva, so too, even what was transferred over to the children, she did not waive the subordination with respect to those assets, and she'd be allowed to collect that as well with respect to the ksuva. The Gemara tells a very interesting case of a person who kind of followed the approach of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. You can answer and just tell everybody, well, no, I'm in the middle of giving a shiur, and I'm happy to call him back. That a person was giving a was following the advice of Rabbi Yochanan ben Boka, and he was giving away all of his assets to one person, and said, and that person was eligible to inherit him. And he said that after that person dies, then the assets, whatever's left over, will go to somebody else. So normally that would work. However, the halacha is im hayar risham the yorsho, if the first person was eligible to inherit him entirely, in accordance with Rabbi Yochanan ben Boka, so then the second person does not receive anything at all, because Yerusha ain la hefsek, because it's considered to have permanently gone into the domain of the first recipient. So there was a case of this sort that came in front of Rav Ilish, and Rav Ilish thought that after the first person dies, the second person would receive the remainder, and the response was, and Rava said, "Oh, dayanim de chatzatz de hachi dayni," that that's a mistaken psak. That's what the dayanim, who just whenever they have two litigants in front of them, they say, "Okay, so this one says this, we're just going to split the claim 50-50, because they figure, okay, we'll do like Shlomo Amalek. You know, we cut the baby in half, that's where we decide all cases. That's not considered the way in which every single case should be adjudicated." So Rav Ilish felt very bad, and Rav comforted him, and he said that Ani Hashem b'itach Hishana, it's a pasuk that says that Hashem comes to the rescue, to rescue people who deserve to be rescued, and this shows what a tremendous tzaddik Rav Ilish was, that he was rescued from making a mistaken psak. Daf Kuf Lamed Daled, famous statement of Shmuel, towards the end of Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, actually, that Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, "Shinina lo tahavi be'avui achsanta," you should never, even if you can figure out a halakhically legitimate way to do it, mechayim and so forth, you should never take away a Yerusha from somebody who otherwise would have been worthy to inherit. Even to take away Yerusha from a really bad son to a really good son. And certainly not to take away from a son in order to give it to a daughter. And the Gemara describes a case along these lines where somebody tried to give away all of their possessions to Yonah's son Ben Uziel because he wasn't happy with the ways that his children were acting. They were on the internet all day. They were just, you know, constantly playing video games or whatever. And he just didn't feel that they deserved to inherit his assets. So he gave it all to Yonah's son Ben Uziel. But Yonah's son Ben Uziel turned around and he gave a certain portion of it back to the children because he felt that it's not right to take away a Yerusha entirely from children. The Mishnah on Daf Kuf Lamed Daled Amud Aleph says that a person is believed to say that he has a son, and the Gemara says the Chiddush is, even if he was Muksak, that he had brothers, and if he didn't have any children, then the wife would have to do Yibum Machalisa with a brother-in-law. Nonetheless, he is believed. Why is he believed? Because, after all, if he wanted to, he had another way in which he could have spared his wife from falling in front of the brother-in-law for Yibum Machalisa by just divorcing her, since he could have done that. He's also believed to say that he has sons, so that the wife wouldn't have to go through Yibum or Chalisa. And Daf Kuf Lamed Daled, we're told that if there's a rumor that there are witnesses who are coming from Medina Sayam to testify that a person whom we thought didn't have any brothers and he didn't have any children did have brothers, and as a result the wife is going to have to go for Yibum or Chalitza, we do have to be worried about that possibility. So the question is, but if a woman was taken as a shvuya, as a captive, and there's a rumor that there are Edom who know evidence that the woman was a shvuya, or that the woman even had relations while she was a shvuya, then we don't worry about it. So the Gemara says that's different, because the case of shvuya hekilu drabanan, that we generally have leniencies when it comes to shvuya, because the mere fact that somebody's a shvuya doesn't mean that they had relations with somebody, because women generally protect themselves out of modesty. So therefore, you can't bring a riot from the leniency that we have in the case of shvuya to the case of yibum and chalitza. The daf kufa lamid bav says that if a person is about to get remarried, a man was married, now he's about to get remarried, but he doesn't want his new wife to have a claim with respect to her ksuba, to all of his assets, so he gives away his assets to his children, but he still wants to be able to enjoy the assets. So he wants to be able to enjoy the payos, but he's giving away the goof of the assets to his children. So he has to use a certain lashon. Lashon is, he has to write, mehayom, I'm giving it from mehayom, from today, u'le'achamisa. You can't give it entirely le'achamisa, because you can't make a king in le'achamisa. So he says, mehayom u'le'achamisa. I'm giving away the goof entirely right now, but the payos he gets to enjoy, the husband, the father gets to enjoy the payos during his lifetime. So Rabbi Yossi,
this is sort of a
common sort of thing that people would do, right? And Rabbi Yossi, however, is of the opinion that the person doesn't even have to write Mehayom. Mehayom is understood as long as the shtar that he writes has a certain date. So Zmano Sheshtar Mochiach Alav. The shtar has the date, so it's clear that he intends for a certain aspect of the shtar to take place immediately. So that's the concept of Zmano Sheshtar Mochiach Alav. A little bit of discussion within the Rashbam, whether we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, and not Rashbam thinks that we do, and he quotes others who say like Rabbeinu Chananu, that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara asks the question: what if the son who now has the right to the peos, but he doesn't have the right to his right to the goof, but he doesn't have the right to the peos? What if the son now sells this field while the father is still alive? So is that considered to be a good masel or not? So we say this depends on the machlokas as to whether kinyan peos, kinyan a goof dami, is the kinyan of peos that the father still has enough of a kinyan that it would prevent the sale from being valid. So Rabbi Yochanan says that yes, that is considered to be a sufficient kinyan, so it prevents the sale of the son from being valid. But Yish Lakish says no, kinyan peos lav kinyan a goof dami, and therefore the whatever rights the father has would not prevent the sale from being valid. Another nafkamina as to whether kinyan peos is kinyan a goof dami or not is whether a person only has a right to peos in a field. So does he bring the peos and as bikurim to actually say the kriyas of sukkim for bikurim? Rabbi Yochanan says yes, because he has kinyan peos and that's good enough. Yish Lakish says no, he has kinyan peos and kinyan peos a lot of kinyan a goof dummy is not good enough. And this is a part case where we happen to paskin like whom? Like Reish Lakish, the kinyan peos is lav the kinyan haguf dummy. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin tells us on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin in base, there's a prince that is the famous Gemara about being yotze the mitzvah of dal and minim through matana amanas lahaksir. That if a person has an esrog and he gives it to somebody else as a matana as a gift, but only on condition that it be returned to him, so then the other person can be yotze, but they have to actually return the esrog. If they didn't return the esrog, then they are not yotze. And but at the same time, the Rashbam has a discussion over here how sometimes there were communities which only had one esrog, and yet everybody used the same esrog. But there has to be ownership of the esrog, which means that shutfus is not going to be good enough. He says, if it would have said pre-eitz hadarchem, that would indicate that shutfus is good enough. Just like with respect to chala, you could be chayv and chala if you have a shutfus in the chala, arisoseichem. And with respect to other things as well, we have a riboy when there's a plural that somebody would be chayv even with respect to a shutfus. However, when it comes to an esrog, since it doesn't say pre-eitz hadarchem, it says ulukachtem lachem, so that means there has to be a higher degree of ownership. So how then can you be yotze with one esrog for an entire shul? Because then there's an understanding that every single person is makne their chelek as a matana to anybody who should pick up the esrog in order to be yotze the mitzvah. On daf kuf lamed ches, there's the notion of mizake, of a zaken, that you want to give a gift to somebody so a person can refuse a gift. So if they only refuse the gift, let's say that the gift is given by Reuven to Shimon, that Shimon should acquire the gift on behalf of Levi. So the Gemara indicates that Levi still has the ability to refuse the gift, so retroactively it will turn out that the gift was not chal at the point in time when Shimon says, oh, I acquired this gift for you, would you like it, Levi? And Levi screams his head off, no, I absolutely did not want to accept this gift. Why can he reject it when Shimon actually received it on his behalf a long time ago? So we say, quoted by Shimon Gamliel, is quoted as saying, Hochiach sofo al tchilasav, haidlo sarach arash, the sarach imat liyade, the fact that he screams at the end shows that he never really wanted it, and the fact that he didn't scream until now is because he figured that if it doesn't reach my hands, why should I scream in protest until such point as it reaches my hands? And daf kuf lamed ches amud beis, we have a person gives some money to his creditor, but he says to the creditor that I am giving it to you. He's giving it to you karaoi. He uses the lashon in which he says that I am giving this. I'm giving you. He says I want. Let's say a shkimira says I want to give 200 zuz to Ploni, who is my creditor, karoilo. He added the words karoilo. He just said could have said, I'm giving it to my creditor. Why say karoilo? That he deserves. It means he deserves the money, and I still owe the money that was owed pursuant to the debt. And the Gemara says this is going according to Rabbi Akiva, the Dayak Lishna Yaseiro, who says that if I add an extra lashem, that means that you sometimes are incurring an extra obligation. That's the idea of the Dayak Lishna Yaseiro. Daf Kuf Lamed Tes. Daf Kuf Lamed Tes is an interesting statement by Admon. The Mishnah, Daf Kuf Lamed Tes, on the base says somebody's left sons and he left daughters. And if there are lots of assets, so the sons inherit and the daughters get whatever amount they need in order to be able to be sustained until they get married. It's only very few assets and the assets are only enough to sustain the daughters, so then the daughters get to be sustained. The sons have to go basically door to door, solicit soliciting alms, soliciting funds in order to be able to collect what they need. And Admon asks the famous question, "Bishvil shani zocher hifsadeti? Because I'm a male, I'm going to lose out?" And Rabban Gamliel says, "Oh, go on, istibei Admon." You know, that makes a lot of sense. So says the Rashbam. He said, "Roas ni istibei Admon." The mashal that the halakha is like Admon, but Bein Hatam says, "No, Admon doesn't disagree with the chachamim. He thinks the chachamim are right. He just thinks that this is absolutely astonishing that the sons have to lose out. Why is it astonishing that the sons have to lose out?" This is the Gemara on Daf Kufa Mem Amid Beis. So what was Admon's reasoning? So he says that Admon's reasoning was that Rishushin Izaka Roy Ani Lasat Batari Hipsati, because I'm a Zakam and I have a mitzvah of learning Torah, so I lose out. So Rabbi says that the fault that the ploy in this reasoning is on Me'ataman, the Asik Torah, who the Yaris, the Asik Torah, lo Yaris. You mean the only people who learn to sin and study Torah get to Yarshin, get to inherit, and those who don't learn Torah don't get to inherit? That doesn't really work out. That even if you don't learn Torah, if you're in the line of succession, you still get to inherit. So Rabbi says that what Rabbi really meant to say is that why is it that if I would gain when there are lots of assets, that I end up losing when there are fewer assets, but nonetheless, the halakha is as Rabbi Natan rules, is not in accordance with the Admon's Tamiya, but rather is in accordance with the Chokarim. The Gemara on Daf Kufa Mem Aleph Amin Aleph says that Bas Tchila Simen Yafel LeBonim, that if somebody has children, Rav Chista says that if a daughter is born first, so that's considered to be a Simen Yafel LeBonim if a daughter is born first. Why is it a Simen Yafel if the daughter to be born first? Gemara gives two reasons. One, because it takes away any kind of Ayin Hara. The second reason is because she helps to raise her brothers. Also a very good thing, right? Okay, so Dav Kuf Mem Beis. Dav Kuf Mem Beis has there's a discussion starting from Kuf Mem Aleph from a Beis that if somebody's Mizakeh, somebody says that I wanted to give certain money, but to my child who's still a fetus, he hasn't been born yet, or to somebody else's child who's still a fetus who hasn't been born yet. So says the Gemara in the name of Rav Huna, Mizake Luuba Lokana. This is a problem because our Mishnah indicates that if a person says, "Oh, if my wife is a fetus that she's carrying right now should be a Zachar, then he should get a money. If it's in a cave, then she should get Masayim." Isn't that Mizake Luuba? So the Gemara there said, "Well, Mishasenu Eni Yodei Mishana." Rav Huna says, "I don't know who's the one who is the Tana of our Mishnah. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. That's not really the halacha." So Daf Kuf Mem Beis, the Gemara actually quotes the Shita of Rosh Hashanah, who is of the opinion that a mezakeh l'uber is kana, that a person actually can say that I am going to give assets to a child who is still a fetus. However, Rabbi Yochanan Daf Kuf Mem Beis on Beis draws a distinction. He says, in general, mezakeh l'uber lo kana. Our mission is different because it's the person's own child. If it's the person's own child, so the das shel adam is karav etzel beno. A person has a very close connection to their own child, even if they're only a fetus, and only in that case would the money actually be transferred. Hoel b'daito shel adam krova eitzel beno. The Gemara has a very interesting question, which is iskolik atayu b'malkam banya olesle kolik atayu b'malkam banya, which means that if a person says, not he's not even a fetus, he says, subsequently born children of my wife, I'm going to give a certain amount of money to. This is a second wife, so the question is, but he has children from the first wife, so do those children get to collect an additional portion if he says that they get to collect just as much as the subsequently born children are going to collect? So Gemara comes to the conclusion that this is considered to be a kani kachamur. He's saying with respect to the firstborn children, you can collect just like a donkey. Just like a donkey cannot receive a kinyan, so to subsequently born children who are not even fetuses, for sure not able to collect, and therefore even the existing children would not get an extra portion, right? Okay, so Gemara on Daf Kuf Mem Gimel. Gemara on Kuf Mem Gimel talks about, what about the other case? A person says, I want you to collect money and I want the donkey. I'm going to give my money, I'm going to give this amount of money to you and to the donkey. So the donkey doesn't get in anything, right? The donkey just simply does it. You can't even Donkey Kong, whatever. Donkeys do not get to make a kinyan to receive a gift. But since the person said you and the donkey, so there's a machlokis whether the person who is eligible to receive the gift receives it. And we pass like Rav Nachman, who says, I'm a kana mechza, that yes, the 50% to go to the donkey doesn't go anywhere, but the other 50% does go to the person who is eligible to receive it.
So what happens at 50%? The 50%
are supposed to go to the other 50% doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere, right? Okay, so Rabbi Yosef has a general principle that whenever a person says, I'm going to give to this one and to that one, like a person says to his wife, I'm going to give to you, I'm going to give my possessions to you and to your children. So Rabbi Yosef says, she receives half and the children receive half. That whenever there are two people, the assumption is that if not specified otherwise, each one gets 50%. This is the halakha, like Rav Yosef we say the halakha is like Rav Yossi when it comes to three cases. Sada inyanu mechza. This is mechza. Okay, simon. Okay, kitaf. Kuf mem dalet. Gemara at the bottom of Kuf mem dalet says Amar azutra honey klasi mili shavina b'maran kilkus tabla taima. There are three different manners in which the chachamim came up with a halakha, even though the reasoning is a little bit difficult for us to fully grasp. One of it is that if a man marries off his oldest son in a particular house, the house happens to belong to him. So guess what? The son gets to keep the house. That's only if he marries a besula. It has to be a besula, and it has to be that he's the first one who is married off. There are various conditions. If the father decided to keep something for himself within the house, it could even be an atzisa taharsin, a can of schmaltz herring, so then the gift is not considered to be valid. So that's what people would do. They would leave like a little something in the house to make it clear they were not intending to give away the entire house when they were giving away their son in marriage. But that's halakha number one. Halakha number two is that if a man gives away all of his property to all of his possessions to his wife, he's only making her into an apotropa, a guardian, a custodian to give out the assets to the children, to everybody else. And the third is what we call mamad shlashtan, that Reuven owes Shimon money, and Shimon says to Reuven, the money that you owe me, I am transferring over to Levi, so Levi is from now on going to be the creditor, so then it's considered to be a transfer of the debt as long as all three of them are standing there. And Tosfos goes so far as to say that after Reuven then assigns the debt, though normally when a person assigns the debt, they can forgive the debt. In this particular case, he cannot forgive the debt. The Gemara on Daf Kufet Mem Hey, the Gemara says that an engagement is broken. In the days of the Gemara, when they spoke about an engagement being broken, it wasn't an engagement being broken, it was an Erisin being broken. Meaning there was Erisin, there wasn't yet Nisuin, there would have to be a get for breaking it, but there were various payments that would have to be made based on this breach of promise, based on costs that had been incurred and so forth. But one thing that never returns is the actual Kiddushin. It was like a ring that was given over as Kiddushin, so that doesn't get returned, because if it gets returned, people will say, oh, it turns out the whole thing was null and void, and therefore the woman didn't even need a get, and now the man is allowed to marry her sister because there was never a marriage with her. So in order to avoid those misunderstandings, we say that the ring is never returned. There's a pasuk that says, that this is on Dafkuf Memheim and Beis. It says that all the days of a poor person are lousy. So there are two different interpretations as to what that's what that refers to. According to one interpretation, that refers to somebody who learns Gemara, because Gemara is hopelessly complicated. And when it says, the Gemara pasuk goes on to say, but a person is always in a happy, festive spirit, so that's talking about Mishnah. Somebody learns Mishnah because they're much simpler. And some say the other way around. No, a person who learns Mishnah is constantly frustrated because he can't get to the bottom line of what the halakha is. A person who learns Gemara, they might have to work very hard, but at the end it's very satisfying that he knows what the halakha is. Mishnah, Gemara on Daf Kuf Mem Bav. Gemara on Daf Kuf Mem Bav talks about the case of a tutanit. A man married a woman and he wanted to check out to see whether she was a tutanit, and therefore it looks like she was an arusa perhaps, and he wanted to check out as to whether it was the whole thing was a mekaktos, because tutanit means that she can't smell. So he hid a radish in his pocket and he went after her into a deserted, desolate area in order to check her out. And he said, oh, I smell a radish. What about you? And she gave some sort of a clever answer indicating that she really did smell the radish and she wasn't a tutanit after all. But he really thought that she was a tutanit and he had in mind to divorce her. And then after this incident occurred, immediately the buildings in this desolate area collapsed and they fell straight on her and she died. If he was Al Jolson, he might have said, tutanit, goodbye. And that was kind of like the end of her. But the question is, so the Gemara says that he does not get to Yarshin her. Why doesn't he get to Yarshin her? So the Rashbam says, because he had in mind to divorce her, so therefore that kind of like broke off the marriage to some degree. Tosa says there's no such thing. He would still get to Yarshin her. The reason is because she was only an Arusa, and the Chiddush is that even though he went into this desolate area, it wasn't L'shem Kiddushin, it wasn't L'shem Nisuin, but it should be like a Yichud to that area, and therefore she wasn't considered Nisuin. She was only considered Arus, and that's why he didn't inherit her. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Mem Zayin. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Mem Zayin asks, what's the marker for Matana Shkimira? We say Matana Shkimira, that is Tivek Shkimira Kisumin Damo, that if he just says that I'm giving over my assets, that's considered to be like a good enough transfer. If he gave away all of his assets, so once if he recovers, then it's considered like the gift is null and void, but otherwise it's considered to be a good gift. So what is the source? So the Gemara quotes all kinds of Sukkim and so forth, but then at the very end that says that really the whole thing is essentially a svara, right? That the that the makor for matanas shkimira is that we wanted to provide for a certain comfort level when the person is in that kind of in dire straits, and it's really a din derabbanan that we enable shema titrov daito alav, that we're worried, says Rav Nachman, that it would be very very catastrophic not to give him the assurance that he can make these dispositions in a very easy and seamless fashion when he is on his deathbed or potentially on his deathbed, and that's why we enable matana shkimira to be effectuated in such a minimalistic fashion that it doesn't require all the standard kinyanim. So now we're up to Daf Kuf Mem Ches. Daf Kuf Mem Ches says that in order for it to count as a matana shkimira, that if he would get better, then the matana would be declared null and void. He has to give away all of his nechasim. He's giving away all the nechasim. If he's giving away the nechasim to a lot of people, he can't like pause in the middle. It has to be like not a situation of nimloch, but it has to be a situation of mechalik, where he has clearly in mind when he starts saying, okay, Reuven's going to get this, Shimon's going to get that, Levi's going to get that, Yehuda's going to get the other thing, that it's clear that he had in mind that he was going to give away all of his possessions. Only then does it have the status and stature of a matanas shkiv meira. Okay, and it doesn't require a kinyan and im omed chozer. Daf kuf mem tes. Daf kuf mem tes says, if I have an odisa, I have a shkiv meira who says, I am mode. Okay, he's mode in front of people. He's mode that he owes money to a particular individual. So that also, says the Gemara, is considered to be an effective way of him transferring the debt. Proof text is from Issa Giora. Issa Giora had a son who's not halakhically his son, that was Mari Barakel, because he had relations with Rakel. He was a captor. He was a captor, and she was a captive. She was a shibuya, and he had with her, when he was still a goy and she was Jewish, he converted afterwards, but he had Ramari Bray Darachel, and halakhically Ramari Bray Darachel was not considered to be his son, so how could he transfer it? So Gemara interestingly says, since Ramari Barachel did not have this relationship of Yerusha, so the only way in which the transfer could be made effectively would be through a Kenyan Odisa, would be through his admitting that he owed the money. Rava was the one who was holding on to the money at the time and was so happy that it was so difficult to transfer, because he figured this way he'll end up keeping the money when Issa Giora dies, but somebody heard that the only way in which it could be transferred was through Odisa, and as a result the word got out to Issa Giora, and Issa Giora therefore at that point in time transferred the money through an Odisa, to making this Kenyan Odisa of admitting that he owed the money to Rav Murray, and therefore Rav Murray was able to receive the money. And Rava got upset because it was through his conversation where he indicated that Odisa could potentially work, when he was having a conversation about it, that word got out to Issa Giora, so he was makbid, and he said that's not really fair that somebody took advantage of our learning to use this kiddush against me, but that's life. So now we go to Daf Kuf Nun. Daf Kuf Nun says that there are five different people that the din, whatever din applies to them, only is applicable if all of the assets are given away. Who are these five individuals? So the five individuals are a shkiv meira. Shkiv meira, the matana shkiv meira only applies when he gives away all his assets, or gave away only some of his assets, so then there has to be a kinyan, and if he gets better, it's still considered to be a final kinyan, unless he was mitzara machmas misas, the Gemara says later on, and the Rashbam talks about this quite a bit, or it's his eved, he says, oh, I'm giving all of my nechasim to my eved, so the eved goes free, but if he leaves anything, then it's assumed that he left the eved, and the eved doesn't go free. Ishto is the case where a person, as we mentioned, writes all of his nechasim to his wife, so it's only in such a case that we assume that she is a guardian. If she didn't give all the assets, so then it's assumed that he really meant to give whatever assets he gave to his wife for the wife to keep. And Uvanov, that is a case where we say that if a person distributes all of their assets to their children and they gave a tiny little bit of karka to the wife, then that's considered to count as full payment of a ksuva, and she can't collect an additional amount of the ksuva from whatever the children had received. And Mavreches is a case of a woman who's about to get married, but she doesn't want the husband to be able to take her assets away, so she writes the assets to her children, let's say from her first marriage, so that they will hold on to the assets for her, and it's understood that she doesn't intend for them to keep the assets. That's only true if she gave away all the assets. Daf Kuf Nun Aleph. Daf Kuf Nun Aleph also talks about a case of Mavrechet and says that in the event that even if you hold that Mavrechet doesn't work in the sense that whoever received the assets would get to keep the assets, the Rashbam seems to hold that there's a sheet like that. Tosu says it's no shita like that, but this is only in a case where only some of the assets, not all the assets, were given away. Nonetheless, even according to that opinion, if the person made it very, very clear that they were only giving away the assets for a very specific purpose, so then if that purpose does not come to fruition, so then the gift is considered to be null and void. The Gemara there tells the story of the mother of Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, who wrote her assets to Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia because she made it explicit, because she wanted to go and marry Rav Zavid, but the marriage really didn't work out. Very, very quickly it unraveled and he divorced her. So says Rav Huna Bray de Rabbi Yoshua, it's clear in this case that would not be considered to be a valid matana, and Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia would have to give back the money to his mother. Daf Kufet Nun Aleph Amin Beis has this very important principle that even though normally if a matana shkimira has a shiur, it's not all the assets of the person who's the shkimira, then it's considered to be a permanent gift and it requires a kinyan. This is not true if it's mitzava machmas misa. If the person makes it clear that giving away even a partial gift only because they are anticipating their immediate death and then they don't end up dying, so then the gift is not considered to be a permanent gift. It reverts, and it also would not require a kinyan in the event that the person did die. Now, that brings us to Daf Kuf Nun Beis. Daf Kuf Nun Beis says that if I have a shkimira who, in addition to saying I want to give away my assets, also has a kinyan that he includes in it, so then a kinyan generally leads to the writing of a shtar. So Shmuel says, I don't really know what to do. It could be that in this case he didn't intend for the kinyan to be effectuated unless it was a shtar. There's one exception to that, and that is miapes kochel. If it's written in such a way that he indicates that the kinyan is only intended to make the matana shkimira stronger, and there's a certain nusach that the Gemara gives as to what miapes kochel would be, what the lashon of miapes kochel would be, that indicates that the person only intended for it to be a stronger kinyan and not a weaker kinyan, so then for sure that would still continue to be valid as a matanas shkimira. Okay, that brings us to the lashon, if you want, for miapes koko is on kufnun base on a base. The Gemara asks 4 lines in, hekidam miapes koko amav kista bekanina mine mostly from matanasa da, that he says, and the kinyan was only intended to enhance the strength of the matanas shkimira. So if it's only intended to enhance the strength of matana shkimira, so obviously that would not diminish it; it would only strengthen it. The Gemara also has a very important principle in the name of Dimi. Daitaki Mivah tells Daitaki. Somebody writes a matana shkimira to one person, and then before he dies, he writes it to the second person. So normally, if you write a permanent kinyan, so the first person wins. But in this case, since the shkimira doesn't necessarily end up being a permanent kinyan, if the person would end up getting better, the second person wins. So that brings us to Daf Kuf Nun Gimel. Daf Kuf Nun Gimel says that if a person wrote in a matana shkimira, a lashon of b'chayim, so you might think, oh, so it's not intended to be a matana shkimira, it's intended to be a matana during the person's lifetime. The person wrote b'chayim of amaris, we say, no, it's only intended as a simin tov. It's a matana shkimira. The person wrote b'chayim as a simin ba'alma that he's hoping that he will end up living, even though it doesn't look so good, but he writes b'chayim, it's kind of like a simin tov. So the question in the Gemara is, what about if he wrote mechayim? If he wrote mechayim, so maybe mechayim sounds like it's really intended for the kinyan to take place right now, and that's considered to be a permanent kinyan. So Rava says, yeah, mechayim is a permanent kinyan. A maimah says nothing doing. Mechayim is the same thing as bachayim, and it's just meant as a simon tov. It said the Gemara tells a story where Rava did act. He did paskin in a particular case according to his own shita that mechayim means that it is taking place in the person's lifetime, and it's not like a matana shkimira, and therefore a woman who gave him a matana in that fashion was not allowed to reclaim it. And the woman basically said, "A pox upon your boat. Your boat should sink at sea." And Rava tried to get out of it, but he couldn't get out of that curse because even as Rashbam says, "The al tehei." Kill us, head your color, beinecha, and his boat in fact sank at sea. Okay, so Daf Kuf Nun Dalet. Daf Kuf Nun Dalet tells us that there is a machlokis, and there was a machlokis in the Mishnah on Kuf Nun Gimel to Rabbi Meir and the Kukarim. A person didn't write that he was a shkimira when he gave away a particular gift, but now he says, I was a shkimira and I want it back. And the people who received it said, no, you weren't a shkimira and we get to keep it. So Rabbi Meir says he has to bring a raya that he is the shkimira. The Chachamim say those who want to receive the assets have to bring a raya that he was not a shkimira and that they get to keep the assets. So the Gemara has different opinions about what exactly is at the core of this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And according to one opinion of Rav Chisda, Rav Bar Rav Huna, They said that what they're really arguing about is whether modeh b'shtar shiksavo tzarek l'kaimo. If somebody admits that he wrote a shtar, does he have to be? Do we have to be mekayim the shtar in order for the shtar to be valid? We just say no. Once he admitted that he owed the shtar, so he can't get out of the shtar in any other way. So according to Rabbi Meir, once that he made an admission that he wrote the shtar, he can't get out of it by saying I was really a shkemira. And the chachamim said no. Once he admitted it, we say a pesha asu a pesha yeter. He can still try to get out of it if we don't independently have the ability to be mekayim it. All right. Daf Kufnun Hay asked the question of when is a young child of sufficient maturity that he can sell real estate. So very interestingly, even though normally a person is a gadol when they're 13, when it comes to selling real estate, the Gemara records different opinions about whether he has to be 18 years old. With the Gemara, and the opinion that we accept is that of Rav Nachman, who says we bet esrim shana, that he has to be 20 years old in order to sell karka. The Gemara does indicate that there are exceptions if it can be proven that the person really had a high level of das even before he was 20 years old. The Gemara tells a story in order to prove that point on the bottom of Kuf Nun Hayim Beis. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Nun Vav says that we check people in order to evaluate their gadlus as to whether they are a gadol or not when it comes to various things. And one of the things is with respect to chalitza. So the Gemara says, what's the chiddush with respect to chalitza? In order to show that we don't hold like Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi says that it's only with respect to the man that that the Torah says he has to be a gadol to do chalitza, because it says im lo yakpots ha'ish, but it doesn't say isha. So this is showing that we are makshinan isha liish. So we say that just like the man has to be a gadol for purposes of chalitza, so too with respect to the woman, she has to be a gadola with respect to chalitza. That's why when we perform chalitza, we make sure that both the brother-in-law who's performing the chalitza and the sister-in-law who's performing the chalitza, that both of them have the simanim, that they are not only 13 and 12 years old respectively, but they also have the simanim of being a gadol. The Gemara on Daf Kufnun Zayin, she speaks about a very interesting kinyan, that a person is a malve and he has a shibud over the loven. Normally he wouldn't have a shibud with respect to subsequently acquired assets of the loven. But what if he says to Ikni, he says, I'm going to have a shibud, the loven even agrees to this, that the malve would have a shibud on subsequently acquired assets that are then sold to other people. In other words, these assets don't exist at the time of the loven, they're going to be acquired afterwards by the loven, and then the loven sells it to other people. So can the malve take those assets away from the lekuchos who receive it after the loven has acquired them subsequent to the loan? So we say, according to Rabbi Meir, who holds the makna derash lo b'olam, this is not a question. But what about according to the chachamim? Do we say it to ikni, or do we not say it to ikni? So the Gemara seems to indicate that we would say to ikni in such a case, that there is a possibility of subordinating subsequently acquired assets that the loven does not yet have in his possession. So then Gemara asks the question, what if the loven makes this type of shibud with respect to two different lenders? One lender lends him money in January, and he says to Ikni, I'm going to subordinate subsequently purchased assets, and then the next lender loans money to the Love in February, and now the Love acquires the assets in March that he then sells to purchasers in April. And now both of the Malvim want to be able to collect their loan from those assets. So who gets to collect? Do we say that only the first one, only the second, both? So the Gemara says, Ravina, in his Madura Kama, he said that the first creditor gets to collect because the first mortgage or the first lien was given over to him. And in his Madura Basra, the second time that he learned the Sugya, Rav Ashi said, no Yachloku, that they both split it with each other. So this is where we get the terminology of Madura Kama, Madura Basra. Rashbam suggests that maybe Rav Ashi went through all of Shas like two different times, went through all of his learning. He lived for 60 years. First time was until he was 30, and the second time was until he was 60. So the first time around was his Madura Kama, the second time around was his Madura Basra. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Nun Ches says that there was a dispute between two Amoraim in the case where a house collapsed on a man and on his mother. And Rabbi Akiva says that I agree that in this particular case, the possessions go of this person stay where the Chazaka, where they started out. Where did they start out? So Rabbi Eila says, that the Chazaka is in the ones who are holding it one of the heirs of the mother, as opposed to the child, and therefore it's considered like it's in the possession of the mother, that we assume that she was the last yoresh, so to speak, and that she gets to keep everything. And Rabbi Zeira had disagreed and said, no, they go into the possession of the heirs of the son. And then Rabbi Zeira went to Eretz Yisrael, and he decided, he came around to Rabbi Ela's position. He saw the truth and wisdom in Rabbi Ela's opinion. So on what basis did he suddenly wake up when he came to Eretz Yisrael? So I'm Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira said, from the fact that I woke up and I saw the light when I came to Eretz Yisrael, Shema Mina, Abir de Eretz Yisrael Mechakim. We see from here that when you go to Eretz Yisrael, that makes you smart. Very important principle. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Nun Tes. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Nun Tes says a very interesting case at the bottom of Kuf Nun Chesim Beis. It says that a son who decides that he sells the assets of his father, but his father didn't die yet. So therefore, he didn't have the rights to his father's assets. He never got the rights because his father ended up dying before the grandfather died. So therefore, and these were assets, excuse me, that he sold that the father didn't even necessarily have yet, because when these were ro'oi for the father to receive from the grandfather. So the son sells these assets that are going to come to the father's possession when the grandfather dies, but the father ended up dying before the grandfather. So we say that the purchasers therefore never had a right to these assets, and therefore the son, is allowed to collect from the kukos. Okay, so in other words, what happened was that Reuven sold the portion that he expected to inherit from Yaakov. He died before Yaakov, and now the son of Reuven is allowed to come and to collect from the purchasers because the father never really received these assets from the grandfather. That's what happened. In other words, there is the grandfather, Yaakov, then there's the son, Reuven, and then there's the grandson, Chanoch. So Reuven sold the assets that belonged to Yaakov before in Yaakov's lifetime. Reuven then died, and then Yaakov died, so now Reuven's son, Chanoch, can take the assets away from the Lukukos. And the Gemara says that this is a very, very difficult halakha to understand. Vizui shekoshe b'dinei mamnas. The Gemara says, why is it so kosher? We have a general principle, tachas avosecha yiyu banecha, that we understand that the grandson is able to inherit what formerly belonged to the grandfather. That's tachas avosecha yiyu banecha. So the Gemara ends up saying, no, but I would have thought that's just like a bracha, that it means that the tzaddikim are going to have not only sons, but they're also going to have grandsons to be available to inherit them. They're going to have many generations, just a bracha, but not an idea that the inheritance somehow skips a generation and never really belonged to the father. So the Tishis never really belonged to the father because the father predeceased the grandfather. Okay, got that? Good. Okay, so now Daf Kuf Samach. Daf Kuf Samach talks about a Gitma Kush. There were two different ways that they had shtaris, that they had different contractual documents. One way that they had documents was the way that we write documents. That you have one page and the whole shtar is written, and you have Edom at the bottom. But they also had something which was complicated. This was both for a get isha, divorce documents, and also for other shtaris. It was called a get makusha, where it was like folded after between every single line, and then your witnesses who signed on the back of the document. So what's the reason that they had such a convoluted document? So Gemara says it was done because of Kohanim, that time of Maitzakinim Abana Makusha, Asr the Kani Abu Bahabu Kapti Tuba Magashin Ashayu, because they were Kohanim, and Kohanim are very big Kaptonim. Kohanim get very upset at people, you know? I mean, not that I would, I mean, I'm a Kohen and I never get upset. It's, no, but nonetheless, sometimes Kohanim have the potential to get really upset. So since they had the potential to really get upset, they might just precipitously divorce their wives when they get angry at their wives. So therefore, the Chachamim created a very convoluted document for them to divorce with. So by the time that they would get to finish writing such a long, difficult document, they might cool down, and then they will decide in the end not to divorce their wives. Because if they do divorce their wives, they can't take them back, because then the wife would be a grusha. Daf Kuf Samach Aleph says that we have to be a little bit worried, because what if somebody doesn't like the last couple of lines of the document? They might just, you know, cut it off if it's a get makusha, and you already have a lot of edim who signed on the opening folds of the document. So the Gemara concludes and says, no, the way and the direction in which the edim sign is perpendicular. But maybe you'll cut off the beginning of their signature. Says that you can't do it, because then you'll just be kind of left with part of a half name. So he says, well, maybe a half name is okay. It'd be like just the father's name. So he says, nobody has the chutzpah of signing with their father's name. Because the Gemara says, yeah, but maybe the father's name is just like a simon. Because there were various Amoraim that would sign documents, like it was just drawing pictures. Rav would draw a fish. Rabbi Kanina would draw a palm branch. A Karusa, Rav Chista would write a samek for his name. Rav Hoshia would write an ayin for his name. So the Gemara says, yeah, people will come up with other simonim, but nobody's going to be such a mechutzif that they're going to use their father's name as a simon. In the end, the Gemara says that we make sure to line up all of the signatures in the perpendicular direction, that every single aid has to begin from exactly the same place. So therefore, if you cut off one aid, you're going to be cutting off part of all the aid, then and somebody's name is not going to make sense. So therefore, we're not so worried about this. Gemara and Daf Kuf Samach Bey says a very important principle, and they made the Mishita Acharona, that we don't learn from whatever's the last line in a document. The last line in a document, you don't write anything of significance because we don't learn anything from it. And the corollary of that is, that if I have two blank lines at the end of a document, that's going to be puzzle, because a person can write whatever they want in the first of two blank lines, and that is going to count. So therefore, you can't have two blank lines at the end of a document. People aren't always so careful about this. This is something to watch out for. You can't have two blank lines, because while if somebody wrote in the very last line, it wouldn't count. It's a little shita achrona. Right. If somebody wrote in the second, penultimate line, so that would count. And somebody could just forge something. They'll just forge, oh, and also, Reuven owes an additional $3 million to Shimon. So you have to be careful about that. The Gemara on Kuf Samach Gimel says that you can trust a Bezdin, though. If a Bezdin, let's say I decide I'm just going to fill up the blank space by drawing long horizontal lines. That's called the Tiyuta. So if it's Edom, I have to be worried that the Edom are only signing on a horizontal line. I say, wow, that's a really great artistic horizontal line, and they're going to ignore the rest of the Shtar, and that's all that they're signing on, and therefore the testimony of the Edom doesn't mean anything. When it comes to a Bezdin, if I'm going to close up the space between the end of the Shtar and the Kiyum Bezdin with a lot of just the horizontal lines that I draw, so Bezdin does not sign on a Tiyuta, so therefore I don't have to worry. Bezdin Atiyuta who the Bezdin Atiyuta lo chasimi, and I can therefore rest assured that the Bezdin is really authenticating the part of the document, the chasimus eidim and so forth, that appears before all of the straight horizontal black lines. Daf Kuf Samach Dalet, Daf Kuf Samach Dalet, Amud Beis, famous Gemara, Amrav, Shal Shaveyos Ein Adam Nisomei B'Chol Yom. There are three different Aveiros that a person is not rescued from every single day. Hero Aveira, that a person has Hero Aveira, that they have thoughts in their head of inappropriate thoughts that they have to eradicate from their mind, because as we know, even a person's like, you know, on a computer, and then there's like an image that comes across for like 1 second. So psychologists say it only takes like 0.8 of 1 second for a person to be hooked. So that's another reason you have to stay away from the internet unless it's properly filtered. The Eon Tefillah, and Eon Tefillah for a person to dive in a way, what's the question of Eon Tefillah, that a person is Maharer, that they are only... There's different interpretations what Ian Tefillah means. According to one interpretation, the person doesn't have adequate kavanah. According to another interpretation, the person is only davening kind of like amanas, that they want their prayers to be answered and not lishma. In other words, that certain things have to happen in order for them to be comfortable with their tefillah. So, lashon hara and lashon hara. So, with lashon hara, that's such an aveira. We really think that people speak lashon hara. Can't be. Avak lashon hara. It means that people like say something that could have negative meaning, could have a positive meaning. Avak lashon hara, different interpretations. One interpretation of Lashon Hara. Then the Gemara goes on to say the Rabbah gets, and the most people tend to commit some sort of indiscretion when it comes to other people's money. Umiyu barayis, and only a mere minority of people end up being nitchel, stumbling when it comes to immorality. Bahako lashon hara, but everybody ends up messing up when it comes to lashon hara. Certainly, at the very least, abak lashon hara. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Samach Hey Amud Beis tells us an important principle: it's a contradiction between the beginning of the shtar and the end of the shtar. As a general, we say hako alecha kar tachton. If the beginning of the shtar says that the debtor owes $100, and at the bottom it says that the person owes $200, then we assume that it's $200. The beginning says $200, the end $100, so we assume that it's only $100. So the last lashon is the one that is generally considered to be more controlling. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Samach Vav talks about how there was one time in which the kinim, which the birds that women were supposed to bring as a korbanos, ended up being very, very expensive. So so it was ruled by the chachamim at the time that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel ruled that if a woman gave birth five times, and therefore she owed five korbanos, if she bore one set of korbanos, one to two birds, to satisfy one set of korbanos, she didn't have to bring the others. She was allowed anyway, according to Tzitzit Kachim, and the chova, the obligation of the other korbanos, has simply went away. And the Tzemach Tzedek had a similar thing where and the Tzemach Tzedek did something similar when the fish prices became very expensive, like the gefilte fish story, and he said it's no longer obligatory to eat fish on Shabbos, so that he drove down the fish prices in his community because the merchants were charging way too much, and this Gemara was sort of the precedent for that. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Samach Zayin says, as a general principle, if there's a lashon and a shtar that could be interpreted in two different ways, one which would be more advantageous to the person who's holding the shtar, and one which would be less advantageous, then we generally interpret it in a less advantageous way. Why? Because of the principle of Yad Baal Hashtar Al Hatachtona, that we interpret it in the least advantageous way for the owner of the, for the holder of the shtar. Daf Kuf Samaches says that originally it was decreed that the husband was supposed to pay for a get. Why is it that nowadays we don't require for the husband to pay for the get? But in the law of Din and Haki, nowadays we don't do it that way. Shayunin Rabbana Naisha, we make it the woman's obligation. Kiheke the lo l'shaya, Josh, because we're worried about a guna situation. So we don't want the get to take too long until we finally are able to get the husband to fork up the money. So we just say, okay, the wife pays the money so the get can be done in a prompt fashion. Okay, the Gemara in Kuf Samach Ches on base, important Gemara that talks about what do you do when you have a shtar that evidences an obligation that starts getting rubbed out. It starts getting kind of like Natashtesh. What are the tikkunim that you can do? This comes up sometimes nowadays with respect to a ksuva. People have a ksuva where the signatures of the Edom start to wear out and start to get rubbed out over time. So you have to make a kiyum in order to make sure that the shtar will continue to be effective. What if a person loses their shtar chov? They lose the proof that something belongs to them. Like, for example, they have a shtar mekach u'memkar, their property belongs to them. They lost the shtar, so do we write them a new one? We say yes. We write a new one, chutz me'achrayas shebo, except for the achrayas that they'd be allowed to, in the event that a shtar, that a creditor comes along and says, oh, the person who sold you this house owed me money, and now I'm taking this house away from you. So now the person who purchased the house is allowed to go after a subsequent purchaser of the fields of the original seller and take away the fields. So we don't write the person another shtar that gives him the right of achrayas to take away from a subsequent purchaser, because maybe he'll find the original shtar, and then he'll end up, once the field is taken away from him by a creditor of the seller, he'll be able to collect twice with two different shtaros. He'll be able to collect from two different subsequent purchasers. So we're worried about that. Daf Kuf Ayin talks about how there's a machlokas between Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel about whether sarach levarer or ain't sarach levarer. What does that mean, sarach levarer? You must clarify. What must you clarify? So let's say that a person is on a field. He was on that field. Shimon was on a field that belonged to Reuben. He's on the field for 3 years. He said, I acquired the field with a shtar. So that's good enough. That's a king in Chazaka. He could say, I lost the shtar, and I was on the field for 3 years. Nobody ever said anything. He could stay there, right? That's the Gemara we had earlier in Baba Basa. Except, what does he say? He says, I still have the shtar. Oy, he blew it. He said, I still have the shtar. So Hashem Gamliel says, well, you didn't have to say, I still have the shtar. The Chazaka is good enough. He can just prove his case by having Eidei Chazaka. He was on the field for 3 years. Everybody say, no. He said he has the shtar. He better prove that he has the shtar. Because once he has the shtar, so it's already very suspicious. If he says, I still have the shtar, then he can't produce the shtar. So already his claim becomes suspicious. That's the idea of Sarak Labara. Once he says that, so we have to be Mabara. Now the Gemara on Kuf Ayin Aleph talks about Shtar Me'ucham and Shtar Muktam. If you wrote a Shtar, and the Shtar was written in an earlier date than the debt actually took place, so that's a problem, because then the holder of the Shtar might be able to collect from the Kuchos, who were not on notice at all about this transaction. It's a transaction that hadn't even taken place yet. It's a Shtar Me'uchar, if it's later on in time, so then that's okay, except that where you might be worried that once it's paid up And then the person does not. If we don't write a shover, for example, right? Then the person who paid up the shtar, and now even if there is a shover, there's a receipt saying that he paid up the debt, and now when he paid up the debt prior to the actual date of the document, so the person who is the creditor can pull out the document and say, oh no, this is a new debt, you know, that because it was dated after you paid off the previous debt. So the Gemara says, yeah. So when it comes to writing a shover, you had better make it very, very clear that this shover, this receipt for the payment of the debt, relates to a debt that was post-dated, so that one shouldn't think that now it's a new debt that is being subsequently collected. Now the Gemara talks about, do we write receipts, do we write a shover or not? Because let's say a person loses their shtar. They lose their shtar. They lose like the document of indebtedness that would enable them, the creditor, to collect from the debtor. So what we could say is that we'll write a new shtar, and we'll write like some sort of a document saying that the old shtar is no longer in effect. However, the debtor could say, well, that's very nice to the creditor that you're doing that, but what if I lose, you know, this proof that the old debt is no longer in effect? Now he's going to have two shtars that he'll be able to use against me. So the Gemara says, we're not worried about that argument. We're worried more about the argument of the Malvin. Just because I lost my shtar, I'm not going to be able to collect. That's not really fair, because that if I lose my shtar as the creditor, yochal hala v'chadi, so the lobe is to just be able to keep the money and laugh it off. That's not fair. So the Gemara says, my kosin shtar, you're going to write this shover, like this receipt or this document of evidence that shows that the shtar, the original shtar, is no longer in effect. So avad shomo should say yochal hala v'chadi. So now the debtor loses that receipt, loses that shover document. So now the creditor is going to be able to collect twice and, you know, laugh his head off. So that's also not fair. So we say, no, that we're not worried about it. Why are we not worried about it? Says Rava, because that's fine. Eved lova liish malve. Because a lova, a debtor, is always a slave, is always a servant to some degree to the malve, to the creditor. The creditor gets the break and not the debtor. Says the Gemara on Daf Kuf Ayin Beis that if you have scribes who are writing a document, so they have to be careful to write the date in which the document is actually being written. If they're talking about a kinyan that already took place, like a mechira, for example, where they ate them, they could write the kinyan even afterwards. It doesn't have to be memorialized in a shtar like a haba in order to be able to collect from a shubadim. Nonetheless, you can only write the actual date that they know the transaction took place. Otherwise, they can mess up and write a date that's too early. That will end up being a muktam. So therefore, either they write the date in which the document is being written or the date of the kinyan, but they can't, you know, just make up some other date, because there has to be a truthfulness. One has to be very, very meticulous to write a shtar in a fashion which is accurate, shlola hotzi sheker, that there shouldn't be any kind of a sheker involved in what is written in the shtar. Now, the Gemara then on Daf Kuf Ayin Beis in the Mishnah talks about what happens if I have two people named Yosef and Shimon who are both in the same city. Are they allowed to take out one, whip out a shtar one on the other? So says the Mishnah, Ein yikon lotzi shtar chov zeh al zeh. They can't whip out one shtar that says Yosef and Shimon one on the other, and others can't collect from them, but it sounds like they would be allowed to collect from others. They would be allowed to collect from others. So why are they allowed to collect from others? So the Gemara in Daf Kuf Ayin Beis says, because we're not worried that one Yosef ben Shimon lost his shtar and it just miraculously happened to be discovered by the other Yosef ben Shimon. We're worried about nefila that is not specifically that of one person. It just says, I, Reuven, owe you money. And we don't know who the you is. So says Abai, Rav Huna and Abai also say, well, you know, maybe it fell out from any, you know, random person just, you know, lost that shtar. But here, which it would have to be a very specific, unusual set of circumstances, Abai says, we're not worried about chashtil and nefila. On Daf Kuf Ayin Gimel, we say that there are different versions as to whether the two Yosef and Shimons are allowed to, whether others are allowed to, whether they, whether 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 the two Yosef and Shimons are allowed to take out a shtar that has each other's names to collect from the other one. So what that depends upon is whether a kosvin shtar lelove afabishen malvi imo. The one of the Yosef and Shimons intends to borrow money. He goes to a sofa and the sofa says, and he says, write that I'm borrowing money from Yosef and Shimon. And then if we say that he's allowed to do that, So then there's a fear that he'll say, oh, I'm really the Yosef Bet Shimon, who is the lender, and he'll collect from the borrower. So if we allow for a shtar to be written for a loan, if the mama's not there, so then they wouldn't be allowed to collect from each other. Daf Kuf Ayin Dalet has the machlokas of Papa and Rav Huna Brain Rav Yoshua about whether if I have a guarantor, he paid off money that was a debt of a particular person who left Yosomim, who left orphan children, and now he wants to be able to collect from the orphans to collect from his guarantee. So Papa says that they're orphans and they're Tanim. So until they're Gedolim, they don't have to repay him because Priyas Bachov is a mitzvah, and they don't have to do the mitzvah yet. They're not bar mitzvah. That they have to do this mitzvah paying the creditors of their fathers. They don't have to pay back until they're Gedolim. Put him right, Rabbi Shua says, we're worried that maybe the father really paid off the chov. Sorry, Asper say that he set aside some amount of money to go to the creditor, and we just didn't know about it. So what's the nafkamina? Nafkamina between those two opinions is Gubika Shekhayev Modeh. When the father, before he died, admitted that he owed the money and that he hadn't set aside the money, so then I wouldn't have to worry about Sari Aspasay, but I would have to say that the guarantor would have to wait until they're Gedolim because of Priyas Baal Chov Mitzvah and the Yisomim Alabanei Membad Mitzvah Ninu. Daf Kufa Ayin Hey, we say that Ashkimira, on his deathbed, he admits to owing money. This is like, you know, our Odisha case. They admits to owing money. So normally, we say that we're worried that he's kidding when a person admits to owing money, unless he designates people who are the Edom and say, and I want you to be Edom. So the Gemara says that when it comes to a Shkimira, we say that Ein Adam Meshata B'Shas Misa, a person does not kid at the time of death. If he says he owed the money, it means he really owed the money. We said in the presence of the witnesses, because and he doesn't have to say ksobu, he doesn't have to say write down what I am admitting that I owe. What I'm saying that I owe is a general principle because it's all considered to be recorded. On Amud Beis, Kofayin Haman Beis, important machlokas, Ula and Rabba. Ula says that Dvar Torah, we have a principle, Shibuda de Araisa, that even if a debt was not recorded in a shtar, a person has the right to collect from subordinated assets. We don't do that because of Seder Lukukos, if it's a Milbal Peh. Rabbi says that Dvar Torah, we say Shibuda Lav de Araisa. Why then can even somebody who has a debt recorded in a shtar collect from Mishubadim? That's Kadesh Lotino Dals with Nelovin, so that we'll encourage people to make loans. Daf Kuf Ayin Bav, the case of the throttled debtor. If I have somebody who's being throttled because he's a debtor in the shuk, and somebody says, leave him alone. So Benana says that the person says, leave him alone, I'll take care of it. You can't collect from that person because it is because we say that he doesn't mean it. He just wants the creditor to leave the debtor alone. Rabbi Yishmael says that if you want to be smart when it comes to dinei mamonos, you should always follow what Benana says. However, it happens that the halakha is not like Benana's. Halakha is not like Benana's in the case Benana was analogizing, a case where you have an RF who only guarantors after a loan was already made, and he compares it to the case of throttling. Laura says, what about the case of throttling itself? Does Rabbi Yishmael similarly disagree with Benanis and we don't pass the Benanis? We say, yeah, Rabbi Yishmael similarly disagrees with Benanis, and the halacha is not like Benanis in either case, even though Rabbi Yishmael has high praise for him, because you can have high praise without necessarily passing that way. And this brings us to the end of Baba Basra, and again, we've only just discussed the highlights, but as Hillel said in the Masechta Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, Vidach, Zil Gemor. Okay.